Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, good water, food, sometimes even herbal and natural supplements can really make a difference to your pet's overall health. And so we'll be talking about how to build your pet's immunity and keep them healthy and happy during these times with our guest, Dr. Carrie Donahue. She's owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. Dr. Carrie provides an option for holistic and alternative care. And her clinic offers acupuncture, botanical medicine, vaccines, other wellness care, including nutritional recommendations as well. So, how do you keep your pet's immunity strong? What do you want to know about natural treatments for respiratory issues in your pet, for example? Love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Carrie, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be back.
So how are things going in your life as a veterinarian with the COVID-19 and everything? Is it creating problems for you as a veterinarian?
Well, you know, it's really changed the way that I am able to practice veterinary medicine, and I think how most vets are able to practice right now. Luckily, veterinary clinics have been deemed essential businesses here in Wisconsin, so we're still able to practice the same medicine. However, things have changed in just kind of like how we're seeing animals and doing a lot of the either drop-off appointments or curbside service where the client will pull into the parking lot, give us a call. You know, we'll get the animal inside and do everything that we need to do and then get the animal back to the owner. And then I'll follow up with a phone call or an email. So just kind of, you know, doing things a little bit differently, but we're still able to do everything that we need to do, luckily.
I'm so happy to hear that because I was thinking about my own kitties, and with the announcement that only essential services right away, I thought, well, veterinarians have to be an essential service.
Right, yes.
For sure.
I know, they have to be. I mean, animals are still getting sick, you know, and they need care, and there are some things that we can postpone, and a lot of veterinarians are kind of pushing off, you know, routine wellness appointments or elective surgeries, but certainly essential services to keep animals healthy and treat them if they're sick. Those are still widely available.
So can common household pets contract COVID-19? I don't think so, but do we even know?
Well, you know, as of right now, there is no evidence that animals can contract COVID-19 or transfer it to people. So that's a good thing. But of course, you know, all of this is kind of ongoing and we're learning more every single day. But I will say there is a lab, a nationwide lab called IDEX, that has been testing thousands of samples from sick pets with upper respiratory signs, and they've not had a single positive result yet. So as of right now, we're kind of thinking no.
Well, I was one of my cats, Coco, climbs up on my bed with me in the evening and likes to, you know, be up around my head area there, and he's looking right in my face and sneezed right in my face.
I think you're safe, though.
Oh, my goodness, what a surprise. Not a good one either. Well,
no, no.
So what do we as owners need to know in terms of just caring for your pets right now? Just kind of keep on with the good thing?
Right, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the kind of the bright side of all of this, as difficult as it is, pet owners are spending more time with their pets at home, you know, which is always a good thing. So more time, it's still fine to go take your dog for a walk, maybe twice a day, maybe four or five times a day. And that's always a good thing. But really kind of remembering to keep that 6-foot separation, not only between people, but also between your pet and other people, because that you know, would be a potential issue if somebody who was sick pet your dog and then you petted them afterwards. So that would be a possible way for things to transfer. But otherwise, yeah, just kind of everything as normal, but just at home.
What about natural things pet owners can do to help with the cats and the dogs who already have some sort of upper respiratory issue?
Oh, yeah, I know. That's a very good point. There are a lot of things that pet owners can do, you know, to really kind of help with any of those upper respiratory signs, whether they are due to even allergies, which those are starting to pop up right now, or, you know, something else, some other bacterial infection. But I always think a really nice thing to do is, if pet owners are not doing it already, would be to add in probiotics to the food. Just because 70% to 80% of the immune system is in the GI tract. So by adding probiotics in, by getting the GI tract as healthy as possible, that will go a long way in just kind of overall helping them to get over something like that.
And some people may be wondering, well, what does she mean by probiotics? What would be examples?
Oh, you know, you can get specific dog and cat probiotics, which either come as a powder or in a capsule that you can just mix right in with the food, just like you can get human probiotics. So that is the good flora, the gut bacteria that really, you know, helps to digest the food and keeps the whole body in balance. But, you know, you can also think about whole food sources of probiotics, and that would be things like fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, fermented vegetables. Those would also be good sources of that good bacteria.
I think my cats would starve before they'd they are such picky eaters. It's so hard. Well, you know that.
I know. What about
you and
yogurt?
I mean, yogurt, yeah. They don't like yogurt at all. They just look at that, smell that, and turn around and walk away.
Yes, but you know what I have found, though, is the thing that most cats and dogs go for and like the best out of all of those whole food probiotic choices is fermented goat's milk.
Ah.
So that might be something to try, and that's, they usually like it for whatever reason. So that, and that's a good source of the probiotics and digestive enzymes.
Well, enough about my cats. Let's find out about other people's cats and dogs and their issues. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we have Richard from Two Rivers on board here, so let's go there. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
I kind of have a difficult question for Carrie. I have two dogs, but the one dog is a 110-pound black German Shepherd. Mm. And several months ago, he started to limp out of one leg. He had x-rays taken. There was nothing wrong. And then he's about a month ago, he started limping on the other leg. Now he had a history of Lyme disease back, which the vet didn't treat when he was 2 years old. He's five now. Now he's got almost total paralysis. I had to carry him, which he's not light, from the dog park yesterday. And they put him on antibiotics and all kinds of medications. And okay. I took him to the vet to euthanize him yesterday. And because he's not getting better, and the only advice they would say is, we're not going to euthanize a five-year-old healthy-looking dog. Mm. I said, well, what should I do? They said, send him up to Green Bay for MRI. I said, I can't afford that anymore. I already spent $500 on him in the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. So my question is, I'm going to continue the course of the antibiotics that they asked me to for another month.
Okay.
Is there anything I could do nutritional-wise to maybe help out? It's obviously paralysis on both legs.
Yeah. And how long has he been on the antibiotics?
Over 2 months now.
Oh, okay, so it has been a while. I would say the same thing. If he's still eating and drinking and seems to be comfortable, if you could stay the course and just give it a bit more time, but I know how difficult this is. as far as nutritionally, I always think it's nice to feed fresh food. So I'm a big fan of home cooking for dogs. And just even if you do have a base of kibble or canned food, adding in as much fresh food as you possibly can on top of that, just because it provides them with so many different nutrients that could be helpful in, you know, maybe helping him to recover a little bit faster.
And so any kinds of foods, or what would you suggest,
Carrie? Yeah, you know, I always say single ingredient items. So, of course, staying away from grapes, raisins, and onions, because those can be very toxic to dogs and cats. But really, if you want to add in fresh meat, and I usually say cook it instead of doing raw meat, you can add in an egg, you can add in fruits and vegetables, you know, anything like that. And usually it kind of just depends on what the animal might be interested in eating. So it's kind of a trial and error thing, just going through and offering different whole foods.
Richard, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, talking about your pet's health. We've been zeroing in about boosting your pet's immune system, but taking certainly other questions as well, as you just heard. So feel free to join in. Donovan in Madison called in, couldn't hang on, but wanted to know if someone who has pets hospitalized or who has pets and is hospitalized for COVID-19, are there any special precautions he should take to go over there and take care of their pets? And I know you mentioned, and when you're walking with, you know, don't be petting the other person's animals, or
right,
keep your own animal away so that it may get spread that way, just through petting. But
Yeah, I think this, you know, probably the most important thing would be just washing your hands before, washing your hands after. If the person could wear gloves, I think that would be even better, just because...
Rubber gloves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just some sort of protection for their hands, and then still just practicing that, the hygiene that we're all, you know, doing right now. I think that's probably going to be the best way to approach that.
That's a tough one. Are pets' immune systems similar to ours?
How are they
different?
You know, really not very different at all. Just kind of the underlying, the cells that make up the immune system would be the same in animals as they are in humans. What's interesting, though, is that pets, or dogs and cats in general, are vaccinated much more than any other species. So, you know, you kind of think about that, whereas humans get vaccines when they're younger and maybe a few as they age. Dogs and cats typically get vaccinated at least once a year or every 3 years. So their immune system is kind of constantly being challenged by vaccines. So that's another thing to kind of think about is, you know, if you do have a pet, thinking about vaccinations and thinking about not wanting to over-vaccinate and not wanting to overstimulate the immune system, but still doing everything that you can to protect them from the diseases that we vaccinate for.
I know that you may have mentioned, and probably Dr. Sandy Sawchuk has mentioned, is there are some vaccinations you're supposed to give every, whatever, 2 years, and now often the vets are saying, well, no, I'm going to stretch it out to 3 or 4 years.
Yes, exactly. So that's kind of a nice thing, that as we understand what vaccines are doing in pets' bodies, and vaccine studies are ongoing to see how long that immunity actually lasts, we're able to say, okay, you can stretch out the time period between vaccines.
Dr. Carrie Donahue, our guest today. She owns and operates and is founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. Go on our website, and you're going to see a great website there, I believe. I haven't looked at it today, but the last time I looked, it was pretty a pretty good one. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jane Rotunda, our producer, Bill Martins, our on-air producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Carrie Donahue of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. Great to have her with us. Certainly, if you have a question, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Chris in Mineral Point, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this goes out to the gentleman with the German Shepherd. A number of years ago, I read an article about a lady who had been misdiagnosed, ended up having Lyme disease, and they couldn't do anything for it. What happened was she ended up getting stung by, like, hundreds of bees, and she started feeling better. It's a really small sample size, but they have done a little research that the venom in certain bees may help with the side effect of Lyme disease.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I have never heard of that. So, and Chris, you were breaking up, so I'm sorry we kind of lost you there or losing you there, but the venom in bee stings, she was saying the venom in bee stings has something that combats Lyme disease, or some venom, bee venoms.
Right.
Have you ever heard that?
I actually have not, no. So that would be something to kind of look into, yeah.
I have to go online and take a look and see if I can find anything out about that. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
So, Beth in Wausau, it's your turn. What's on your mind?
We're all apparently worried about this German Shepherd, so let me add my two cents.
Okay.
We have a Great Pyrenees and had a similar issue years ago where her back legs just started giving out, and she was very thin on the back end. And you know, a Great Pyrenees is supposed to be huge, and I could still fit my hands around her waist when she was prone. And every time we took her to a vet, it was, nope, everything's where it should be. Nope, she's negative for everything. Well, we finally heard from a friend about an animal chiropractor. And we took her to this chiropractor, and it was like a miracle. She always had this bump on her back that we just... And the chiropractor said,
no. Oh, you're breaking up. We're losing you. I'm sorry, Beth. I'm in a little trouble with our phones once in a while here today. But so here's a dog that wasn't walking well and got some veterinary chiropractic care, and it was a huge help.
Mm, that's wonderful to hear. And, you know, you just don't know what something like chiropractic will help and what it might not. But, you know, it's certainly something to consider, especially for the gentleman with the German Shepherd. If that's even a possibility, that would be wonderful. But chiropractic and acupuncture and kind of those alternative medicines can do wonders, especially when Western medicine doesn't always have the answer.
Right. Well, you perform acupuncture. Can you give me an example of where it might have worked in your practice?
Oh, boy. Probably the biggest thing that I use acupuncture for is older dogs that have arthritis and that have kind of like weakness in the back legs. That's probably the most common issue that I see. And I love acupuncture because it's not a medication. It's not even something that you have to get them to take. It sort of works on a completely different level, kind of on this energetic level, putting these needles into certain energy spots, acupuncture points on the body to kind of help bring the body back to a normal state. And it's hard to describe, but it really does make a difference, and that's why I love doing it, because you can have a dog that is having a really hard time walking, getting up, lying down. After an acupuncture treatment, you see the difference almost right away.
Have you ever done it with cats?
Yes, cats, not as often as dogs. Cats usually, you never know. Certain cats do really well with it, and certain cats, you know, don't like it as much.
My cats wouldn't like it, but I...
Yeah, and usually going very, very minimal. Whereas in a dog, I might put in 25 needles. In a cat, I might do 3 or 4, and that's it. So different.
Good luck to you getting three or four in Coco.
Or Tiger. You never know, though. You know,
no, you never know.
That's what a lot of people think is, oh, my dog will never sit still for acupuncture. This is never going to work. And then once we start doing it, it's amazing how animals almost just seem to know, that we're trying to help and they really relax with the treatment. So, yeah, maybe.
Gregory in Turtle Lake. It's your turn. Hi, Gregory.
I had another comment on the German Shepherd. I used to have one, and it was about the same size. It was about 110 pounds. And he'd always meet me at the door when I'd come home from work. And one day he didn't meet me, and I thought, uh-oh, what's going on? I went in the house, and he was sitting down, and he couldn't get his back end up. And so, well, to make a long story short, what I did was I'd pick him up, I'd pick his back end up and get him to take a few steps every day, it seemed like I wasn't getting anywhere, and I was just about ready to put him down, and he started getting up and walking on his own.
No.
Even to go pee, I would hold his back end up, and I'd have a coffee can under him. I'd go, okay, Max, go pee. And he'd look at me like I was nuts, like, hey, we're in the house now, he would do it. But I just kept working with him, and eventually he was getting up himself and able to walk. And this happened three different times, and I was able to save him two of the times. The third time he didn't come back. But it happened about three times in 3 years.
Wow.
Well, that could have been anything there, couldn't it? I mean, there are a lot of things that could cause the paralysis in the back legs.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I know. So you do the best that you can with the information and the diagnostics that have been done and the treatments. But I think, even kind of taking that multimodal approach, doing...
Yeah, Greg was on the right track there.
I know, and doing the support, you can do physical therapy, even just kind of like going through range of motion with those joints. But all of that can help, certainly.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate the call. Stacy in Menasha, it's your turn. Hi, Stacy.
Hello there. I have a 14-year-old cat, and she's my first cat. But in the last probably 6 months, almost a year, one of her eyes waters kind of almost consistently. So every time she's on my lap, I'm just wiping it away. And I'm just wondering if that's normal for an older cat, or should I be worried about it? She doesn't have any other symptoms. She's not, coughing or sneezing or anything.
Yeah, that would be
the usual.
Right. Yeah. So no other signs of any upper respiratory issues. And you never see that the drainage that's coming out seems like it's yellow or, anything that would make you think of an infection. If it's just kind of like that clear watery, it could be something like a plugged tear duct. Sometimes that happens, especially if it's only one eye. And you can talk to your veterinarian, they can go in and flush those tear ducts out. That might be something to think about, but as long as it's not really bothering her and it just kind of waters here and there, it might not be anything to worry about. It might not be anything deeper. It might just be something that happens. Sometimes they can get an eyelash or, a little piece of fur that's growing the wrong way that can rub against the cornea and cause that watering. And in cats, sometimes they can get... it's, like the herpes virus in cats. It usually causes other upper respiratory signs, but sometimes it just shows up with kind of like that inflammation in the eyes. And usually what I recommend for that issue is giving lysine. So that might even be something you can consider doing, giving lysine every day and see if that makes a difference with the watering.
Is there a certain amount of lysine or...
Yeah, so the lysine dosage for cats who are showing symptoms of herpes, which, like I said, it can be just kind of like general upper respiratory issues or even just the watery eyes. It's 500 milligrams of lysine given twice a day.
All right. 500 milligrams twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Stacy, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I'm glad the cat doesn't seem to be bothered by it.
Right.
But lysine might be an option. Let's go to Chris and Adams. Chris, hello.
Hey. this is kind of a little bit of a long story, but this is about how veterinary medicine has changed in the past, 30 years. I had a dog who got contracted Lyme disease before it was known that it was Lyme disease. And he developed a cardiac arrhythmia because of this and became very sick. I took him up to the veterinary hospital in Madison, and they gave me a prescription for phenobarbital and told me he would be dead in 6 weeks, and I wasn't going to listen to that. And so I took him back to Milwaukee, and I found a veterinary acupuncturist who, by the way, your producer, Jill Mendel, used to work for. And she and her compatriot, who is the late, worked for the veterinary hospital in Madison, not in Milwaukee, did acupuncture on my dog for free in order for him to teach this veterinary person acupuncture on my dog for a year. We kept him alive. They told me he would be dead in 6 weeks. We kept him alive for a year and a half, and he was happy and healthy and out playing Frisbee for a year and a half with Lyme disease before they had any idea what it was. And I just think that people should just go out there and try something else. Traditional veterinary medicine has changed a lot in that period of time, but that somebody should just, if they have an animal that the traditional veterinarians are telling them there's nothing that they can do for them, at least try something else on them. Well, there's my dog going off.
Carrie, what do you think here? Chris is talking about the traditional medicine didn't work, and so acupuncture actually extended and saved her dog's life.
Wow, that's an amazing story, and I love to hear things like that. You know, just because it really, there is such a benefit to kind of like opening up those avenues to alternative medicine, whether it is acupuncture, chiropractic, or even, using herbs and supplements and that sort of thing. And I think there's so much benefit, too, in just kind of like an integrative approach, combining the best of conventional Western medicine and incorporating those alternatives in. I think that's the best way to go forward with kind of treating animals. And there has been a change in veterinary medicine, and I think it's kind of being fueled by pet owners who are looking for more alternatives. So a lot of veterinarians are starting to expand their knowledge base in kind of those alternative modalities too, so they can offer these different things.
Let's take another call. Marge in Menominee, Michigan, up next. Hi, Marge.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
When Richard called and explained the symptoms of his dog, previous Lyme disease, our dog had the same issue, had a previous history of Lyme disease, had been treated and recovered, and then a few years later started with the paralysis. And I actually use golden paste, which is turmeric and coconut oil and olive leaves. And she's recovered. She's back to her normal self.
So you rubbed it on? Well, what did you do, Marge?
No, she took it internally.
Okay.
She fed it through, and she took it internally.
Excellent. Oh, I'm glad to hear that, too. And, I think that golden paste, that anyone can look up a recipe online, but it's kind of that curcumin or the turmeric, black pepper, the coconut oil. It's got wonderful anti-inflammatory and pain-relieving properties. So I think that's wonderful to hear that you were able to help your dog feel a lot better using kind of like some natural things.
And the dog ate it.
And that's a big thing.
Marge, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. So golden paste and olive leaf. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kathy in Elkhart Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. We have a 2.5-year-old rough-coated male collie. Almost a year ago, he developed severe diarrhea. So, of course, we immediately started him on chicken and rice, but we also took him to our vet. And since then, he has been on, he was diagnosed with clostridium, and he was given a drug called metronidazole.
Metronidazole?
It's a probiotic.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yep.
And since then, he's been on that on and off. We can't seem to get rid of the diarrhea. We have still on the chicken and rice diet. We have now put him on a clostridium has lessened, so he is now on what is considered on maintenance of the metronidazole. I can't say it. It's like that antibiotic.
Right.
We have him on some Metamucil. We have him on Fortiflora. We have him on a multivitamin. But what else can we do? And is chicken, I guess I have two questions. Is chicken and rice healthy for this dog for the rest of his life? And we do it at home. We make it at home. We boil the chicken, boil the rice. Or is there anything else we can try? I'm worried about this fairly young dog. No.
Right. Yeah, he's very young to have something so chronic. So, you know, kind of thinking about that chicken and rice, I think probably not the best choice for long term. I'm glad to hear that you're adding in a multivitamin just to make sure that he's getting everything that he needs. But I would start to see if you could maybe vary that recipe a little bit. My typical go-to recipe for kind of like diarrhea, any GI issues, even vomiting, is instead of chicken and rice, I recommend ground turkey and sweet potato, 50-50.
Hmm.
So the sweet potato is nice because it's really high in fiber. And then the turkey, a lot of animals tend to do better with turkey than they do with chicken because chicken is a very common allergen in animals in general. So I usually recommend staying away from chicken and just maybe trying a different sort of bland diet. First of all, and then you're on the probiotics, so that's good, and the Metamucil. The only other thing that I would say maybe thinking about adding in would be a bentonite clay supplement. And clay is very nice because it goes in and pulls out any toxins in the GI tract. You just do it for a couple of days, and sometimes that's enough with everything else that you're doing to kind of get things back on track. So that might be something else that I would try.
Bentonite clay, and just can you get that? Where do you get that?
You know, I usually use an animal-specific product just so I know where it's coming from and exactly how much to give. The product that I use most often, it's by the company RX Vitamins, and it's called RX Clay.
RX Clay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kathy, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we've got Russ in Stoughton next. Hi, Russ.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have about a 7.5-year-old Shiba Inu male that I got from rescue when he was about 18 months. And I have two questions. Number one, are Shiba Inu's cold weather dogs similar to, say, a Husky? And the other question is, he loves to romp outside winter, summer. But I have noticed over the last two winters when he was outside standing in snow that after a bit when he does his business, that he has a tendency to hold his left rear paw up in the snow. And I'm wondering, do dogs or do Shiba Inus get frostbite?
Yeah, absolutely. Animals can get frostbite just like people do, and especially on the extremities. So kind of the tips of the ears, but also the pads of the feet. So you do have to be careful about that in the wintertime. But, you know, kind of thinking about there are all of these products out there now to kind of help get your pet through the winter a little bit easier, like booties that dogs can wear or even hats and vests and all of those things. So that might be something to think about doing going forward. And the Shiba Inu, with their the fur is so thick that it makes me think that they are more of a cold weather type of dog, but I don't know for sure.
I don't know either. So there you go, Russ. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Isidore in East Troy will turn to you next. Hi.
Hello, yes. May you please help me on getting my dog ready for kicking season? To see, I have a Dachshund pin, you know, the hybrid of miniature pincher and Dachshund. And what can I take steps if this camping season continues due to the, if it gets affected, though, however, with the COVID-19?
Well, and ticks and other hazards when you're camping, there's, you know, all kinds of things can happen. Dr. Carrie, what do you think?
I was a little bit unclear on his question. I'm sorry.
Oh, he wants to take his adopted dog camping this summer, so he wants to protect it from ticks and other hazards.
Yeah. And I, you know, kind of thinking about if you are going to be camping and you are going to be in tick-infested territory, I usually recommend doing one of the either the topical flea and tick preventatives. There's a really nice collar. It's called the Seresto collar that you can put on your dog, and it lasts for about 8 months. That works really well for ticks. There are some oral medications, too. But I have a lot of people asking me what they can use as far as natural flea and tick preventatives. And typically these don't are not as strong, I should say, as kind of the conventional treatments, but they do work well. You have to use them every single day using kind of like an essential oil-based spray or treatment. So that might be an option too.
Yeah.
But I still think the biggest thing at the end of every day is doing a tick check on your pet.
Even if they have a Seresto collar on, you want to check.
Even if. I know nothing is 100%.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Anything other than ticks? I'm just trying to think of what else might be. I can't think of anything else really that I'd be too worried about if you're with a dog out camping, other than running into a skunk or something.
Right.
Or a bear.
I know. Or, yeah, getting into it with, you know, smaller animals too. So I think kind of, you know, as long as you're doing the monthly heartworm preventative, because you do worry about mosquitoes too, which transmit heartworms.
Oh, yeah.
You're out. And a monthly heartworm preventative will also have an intestinal dewormer in it as well. So if your dog gets, you know, potentially eats something that might have parasites in it, that will protect them. So, yeah, a couple of things.
And thanks a lot for calling, Isidore. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Carrie Donahue, our guest, owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Carrie Donahue of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. And we have one line open, but there are lots of callers online, so let's go to Tammy in Verona next. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling about my 15-year-old cat. And like most things, if I knew then what I knew now, things would have gone much differently. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, we brought home a 6-ounce feral kitty. And I bottle fed him for 3 months, and he ended up being around 25 pounds.
Wow.
But the thing I would undo is we got him declawed. And if I could undo that, I would do that in a heartbeat. The person who declawed him, I took him to the, I won't even say it, but basically some of the pads have been torn. It's a brutal declaw job. And I'm wondering if there is any magic pastes that you have that might help this kitty get around with less pain.
Are you noticing that they're having difficulty kind of like jumping up and down or just walking very tenderly?
Yeah, just walking. I mean, he won't jump. Walking very tenderly, he will hold one of his paws up, the most painful paw. He's literally, if you feel his paws, the tips of his paws, and like I said, it's just his front paws. The tips of his paws have nothing in them, and they're cold.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Like he's walking on his knuckles. And for a, he's 25 pounds, or we actually got him down to like 20.
Okay.
But he should be about 13 is what my vet said. And he's been pre-diabetic.
Okay.
And I need to get him to lose weight. And it's very difficult.
It is. It's very difficult. But I'm glad that you are taking steps to try to get his weight down, because that will also make a difference with his paws, just not that much weight that he's putting on his feet. But I might think about, just for kind of thinking about pain control, a couple of different things. The, you know, one of my top recommendations and supplements for any sort of arthritis or pain in the joints and in general is CBD oil. So that might really be helpful for your cat, just kind of getting him to move a little bit easier. And if he moves a little bit easier, then the weight might come off a little bit better. So, and you can get CBD oil. What I usually say for cats is to use the transdermal formulas, because it's just a cream that you put on the inside of the ears and then it gets absorbed into the body and works that way. So it's pretty painless. The other thing that I would say would be just kind of like a basic glucosamine chondroitin joint supplement, because that really seems to help cats that have been declawed as well.
I hope that helps, Tammy. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's a tough situation.
Mm-hmm.
Norman in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Norman.
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to just make a suggestion to the, all those people who have pets, dogs that are limping. We have a now 2.5-year-old shepherd, and when it was 1.5 years old, 2 years ago, it started to limp, and it wasn't behaving normal. It didn't want to eat as like it usually does, just not doing well. We finally called the vet, and she came over, examined the dog, didn't seem to find anything wrong, but she said, you know, we need to get a screen for various parasites that could be infected, and it came back positive for anaplasmosis, and we put her on doxycycline, and within a month's time, well, it was actually shorter than that. She stopped limping about 1.5 weeks. We treated her for 1 month, I think. And then about 4 months later, she started limping again, almost the same situation. And we had Seresto's collars on before the snow left, and they were still on. And my wife and I, that same year, we had 33 sucked in, mainly those really tiny little nymphs of, parasite that causes the Lyme's disease. We're in a wooded area. We have a lot of deer and a lot of mice and stuff around. So my point about it all is, if you got a problem with your pet, one of the things you want to do is you're going to have to get a vet to look at that animal and draw some blood and have it checked to see what parasite, if any, might be infecting it, because that surely was the issue for us. And then when we got sick, we had the tests, and they even sent it for that Western blot test, and it came back very strongly for the only subunit that's typical of the Lyme's disease organism.
It's a very good point, you know, and it's not just Lyme disease, as the caller mentioned. There are other tick-borne diseases like anaplasma, like Ehrlichia, that are all transmitted by that deer tick. So your pet might be showing, you know, and a lot of those diseases also have similar symptoms. And some of them don't, and sometimes it presents totally differently. So I always think it's a good idea, like the caller said, going into your vet, having the blood drawn so you can test for those diseases, and you can also look at the parameters inside the body, the red blood cells, the platelets, the white blood cells, you know, kidney values, liver values, electrolytes. All of those play into a diagnosis. So I think that's a very good point to make.
Yeah, thank you, Norman. Appreciate it. Adrian in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I have a natural remedy for you for ticks and mosquitoes, by the way. It's tea tree oil. If you take tea tree oil, dilute it twice, so two parts water, one part tea tree oil, put it in a spray bottle, shake it up because it's oil and water, spray it on, you will not see a tick. In fact, if you saw any number of ticks sitting on a piece of wood and you sprayed a little bit of this on them, they'd drop dead.
Essential oils are powerful. Yeah, I agree. I do think, and I usually recommend to pet owners, if you can use a natural product, use it. But if you need something stronger, even just for a couple of months out of the year, then go to the conventional treatments. But as much as the natural things are working, the better it's going to be for your pet, the less toxins they're going to be exposed to. So I think that's a good tip. And the tea tree oil, it's pretty powerful. I would just be careful and not use it on cats, and use it on your dog in a place where they're not able to actually ingest it or lick it off.
Or get in their eyes.
Yeah, right. I know, because it can be irritating.
Yeah. What would you recommend? I've already forgotten what Adrian used, but what would percentage of water, let's say, and tea tree oil would you suggest?
Oh, I would, you know, a couple of drops is all that you need.
Okay.
And you could even do just the oil itself, one drop of the essential oil. And I actually really like cedar oil. That's probably the top thing that I have found that works really well for repelling ticks and fleas and mosquitoes. One drop of the essential oil and about a teaspoon of a carrier oil, like olive oil. You can really use any carrier oil. And then even just putting that drop near the base of the tail of the animal, and sometimes that's all you need, versus doing a whole spray.
Oh, all right. Worth a try there. Adrian, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. And David in Shawano, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello, folks. Yes, I have a big mixed breed dog. He's over 100 pounds, and he's had issues with his digestive system and very severe and prolific diarrhea. And the vet was talking about a possible costly operation. And what I did is I switched him to a grain-free dog food that has yam, pumpkin, and chicken. And they also have yam, pumpkin, and salmon. And I feed him twice a day. I put a few tablespoons of a chicken broth on. And then in the evening, I sprinkle on one capsule of just a generic probiotic, problem has been solved. His stool has been well formed. I have noticed that he cannot tolerate any type of rawhide chew. If I gave him a piece, within an hour he'd have diarrhea. So it's taken me a while to figure that out.
It's trial and error sometimes, isn't it, Dr. Carey?
It really is, especially with GI issues. You know, you're going okay for a while, and then you try something new, and you know right away if that's not, you know, going to be tolerated. So it is, and then you have your list going of what is okay and what's not okay. But that's always, that's good information, so you just kind of get to know your pet better. But I think that sounds like a really good kind of way that the pet owner went about it, switching to a grain-free food, because certainly some foods that have high quantities of corn and wheat and soy they're not tolerated by certain animals in their GI tracts. It just causes inflammation, which then causes the diarrhea. So grain-free food is an option, and then adding in the probiotics, wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that that helped.
And thanks again for calling. Rosie in Ashland, you've got a quick question here, I think.
My daughter has dogs. I do not. But with this virus that's going around, I wondered if the dogs can get it, can carry it, if there's a concern there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know. And luckily, we don't have any evidence right now that animals can contract the COVID-19, that they can get sick from it, or that they can transmit it to people. So as long as you're taking all of the normal precautions that we all are, you know, I don't think you have to worry about getting it from an animal.
Dr. Carrie Donahue will be with us right up until 12:30 today to answer your pet questions. Go to just type in Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in and that's her business, and she's located in Madison. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at your pet's health today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Carrie Donahue, owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. And she provides an option for holistic and alternative care. Her clinic offers acupuncture, botanical medicine. She does vaccines and other wellness care, including nutritional recommendations. So, questions for her, I hope you'll join in. Our lines are all filled right now. You could email us at ideas@wpr.org, and I think we'll just go right to the phones and to Sue in Boulder Junction. Sue, thank you so much for calling.
Yes, I'm calling about that 5-year-old German Shepherd that had paralysis in the hind legs.
Yeah.
It reminded me of my 6-year-old Golden Retriever. She was being treated for a bad back, and she was having antibiotics, and we kept on changing them because they weren't doing any good. Well, one morning, I woke up, and my Golden had no movement in the hind legs. So we went right into the vet in Minocqua, and he sent me down to UW-Madison to the vet school. And after 2 days of diagnosis, they diagnosed her as having blastomycosis in her spine.
Oh.
And she was put on medication. And it took about 2 weeks for the paralysis to finally wear out. I mean, I was taking her outside with a sling. And finally, after 2 weeks, she could limp out. And she was on medication for 9 months, but she was 6 years old at the time. She lived to be 13 and a half.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, so there is something, blastomycosis in the spine. Sue, thanks for bringing that up. Dr. Carrie, what do you think?
That is a really difficult diagnosis to get, and I'm so glad that with treatment she was able to come out of that, because blastomycosis is a fungus, and typically it can kind of colonize in the lungs and cause difficulty breathing, but it's really difficult for pets to overcome that once they get it. So I'm so glad to hear that your dog lived a full life after that. And it just goes to show, too, you know, like Larry, what you said earlier, just knowing that kind of the physical symptoms of paralysis, but there is a wide number of different things that can cause something like that.
And there's another one of them. My goodness. And
right.
And we've heard from a number of people today regarding that. So obviously it happens quite a bit. Judy and Hurley, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a Springer Spaniel. He's 3 years old. Well, he'll be 4 in October. And I have the hardest time controlling him when people come over. You know, I sit him at the door. I try to calm him. Even when I get up in the morning, he is just so hyper. Is there anything that I can do or anything that I can give him maybe to, you know, relieve that anxiety that he has?
Right, yeah. Have you tried any sorts of supplements or anything like that so far?
No, I have not. My vet hasn't recommended everything. All I hear is, well, that's Springer.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Kind of comes with the territory sometimes. You know, a couple of things that I would recommend. One of the first things, and this is often my first recommendation for any animal that's showing that they're stressed out or that they're anxious, and it's called pheromones. So you can get dog-specific pheromones, you can get cat-specific pheromones, and you can get them either as a spray or in a collar. Feel Away is a common brand for cats, or I think it's called DAP for dogs. But I really like the pheromone collars because the pheromones just make the animal feel like everything is okay. So that might be something to do first. And then the next thing that I would try either on top of that or as an alternative would be something like CBD oil, you know, that can be very calming, that kind of tones down the nervous system. So maybe the two of those together would make a big difference.
There you go, Judy. And CBD oil, again, is it a rub in the ear kind of thing, or what do you...
Well, you could either do that, the transdermal formulation, but for dogs, it's usually a little bit easier just to get them to take the oil itself. Okay. You can certainly find it in treats, you know, so that might be an option. But just the oil by itself, either directly in the mouth or mixed in with the food, either way is totally fine.
There you go, Judy. Thank you so much. Let's go to Paul in Green Bay. Hello, Paul.
Hello. My problem is with my cat. My cat, he eats his cat food and he throws it up. And he doesn't do it all the time, but I think he does it too much, you know, and I don't know what the problem that there is.
Yeah. So the cat throws up oftentimes after eating, not every time. My cat does it maybe once every couple of months.
Okay. Yeah, and once every couple of months, you know, that can be kind of a normal thing for cats, especially if they are trying to get up a hairball or something. But if it's happening every time the cat eats or most often after the cat is eating, I usually say starting with a food change. So just going to a completely different type of protein. If the cat is eating a chicken-based food right now, I would go to maybe a seafood-based or a pork or beef-based food, just something completely different, because a lot of times in cats, food allergies can show up as kind of like that chronic vomiting. So I might start with a food change, and again, thinking about the probiotics, those are really good for just kind of like helping to get the GI tract healthy. So if the cat is keeping food down, that would be the next thing that I would add in.
All right. There you go, Paul. Thank you so much for calling. And Pat in Greenfield, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Pat. Hi, this is Pat, and I wanted to tell you that I have a boxer who the 1st of March was taken into the vet because she has been hacking a lot. Mm-hmm. And it could be because she was hacking a lot outside in the cold weather, playing Frisbee and playing with the other dogs. But what they did is they gave her a radiograph and a thoracic series and found out that she has pneumonia. Mm-hmm. She was given doxycycline, Sucralfate, Covenia, Omeprazole, and what I just wanted to find out, oh, she also had an EKG because she does have heart problems and she's on Sotalol.
Oh, wow.
So what I did, that was the 1st of March, and I took her back the middle of March for a check, and she's still on the doxycycline. She was given the radiograph again, and she still got some of the pneumonia. Mm. But she's still coughing.
Mm. Wow. Lots of things. And that can get expensive in a hurry.
Right, yeah. I know, and pneumonia is one of those things where it's kind of longer-term management. So I think it's good continuing the antibiotics, going in for those rechecks, and just kind of helping to get her through this. You know, there are some different herbals that you could use that really help to kind of soothe the respiratory tract and help those mucous membranes. Two that come to mind, one would be slippery elm, and the other one would be marshmallow. And both of those are really soothing, like I said, to the mucous membranes and can calm down inflammation in the respiratory tract. There is an herbal tincture, and it's made by the company Animal Essentials. It's called Respicalm, and that's the one that I usually use for animals who are coughing, who just kind of need that extra support, and it could be something that you could add in right along with the antibiotics and everything else that you're doing just to kind of provide support in a different way.
Very good. Thank you, Pat, for calling. Appreciate it. Lolly in Decorah, Iowa, up next. Hi, Lolly.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate
the call. Very interesting to hear Dr. Carey and all of your callers. And I had something to say about the people that are having animals, dogs that are having diarrhea. I was going to recommend a homeopathic remedy called podophyllum, and I'll spell that. P as in Peter, O D as in David, O-L-Y-M, something like that, podophyllum, P-H-Y-L-U-M, podophyllum. And that's a remedy that I use myself, and normally you would take or give the dog in its food one dose and then wait and see what happens, because usually for myself, I only have to take one dose.
Yeah. Okay. Are you familiar with podophyllum?
I have never used that specifically for diarrhea, but I am a big user of homeopathic remedies in general for different sorts of issues. So I'm really glad to hear that that worked well for the caller. And it might be something, you know, that pet owners who are faced with diarrhea issues could try safely. And that's the really nice thing about homeopathic remedies, is they're very safe, and you only have to use them, like the caller said, just one time or maybe for a couple of days, and it kind of helps to bring the body back to a normal state, or at least that's the idea behind it. So it's usually always safe to try something like a homeopathic remedy, as long as you know what you're, you know, working with, and it's good to talk to a professional, of course.
Thanks, Lolly. Appreciate it. Cheryl in Berlin, we'll go to you now. Hi, Cheryl.
Yeah, I have a question about my 7-year-old cat. She has always had loose stools, not diarrhea, but loose stools, and I give her a probiotic pill every day, and I tried grain-free food, and it doesn't make any difference. Nothing changes.
Mm-hmm. And have you had a fecal sample check just to make sure that there's nothing else going on?
No, I haven't. She's a totally indoor cat.
Okay, so her chances of coming into contact with something would be pretty low. But that might be even just something, if you can run in a fecal sample to your veterinarian, just to be able to rule out all potential parasites that can cause loose stool, I think would be a good idea, something to do. But, you know, you could also, have you tried adding in just more fiber, something like pumpkin or sweet potato?
No, that's what I didn't know what to do, if I should do something like that, because like I said, the grain-free did not help.
Yeah, so that's the next thing that I would do. And usually cats, you know, most cats will eat pumpkin or sweet potato, and you can just get a can of it and do a tablespoon twice a day or mix it in with the regular food. But just adding in that extra fiber can really help to regulate the GI tract. So that would be what I would try next.
All right. Good luck, Cheryl. Thank you. And on to Loretta in Eau Claire. Hi, Loretta.
Hi.
I have a wonderful thing that a friend taught me when I got my puppy, and it worked for her past two dogs. When you need to give them a tablet or a capsule, put it in cream cheese. When my other dogs always would take the medication out and eat the marshmallow, but it always works with cream cheese.
Cream cheese.
That's a great tip. You need those things for when you're in those situations.
I was trying to remember if I'd had Coco or Tiger try to sneak something in cream cheese. I don't think I've tried that yet.
What do you usually use?
They usually won't take anything.
Yes.
That's pretty much it. They know how to lick around and just that pill will be just clean as a whistle. Oh, my goodness. And I'm probably not the only pet owner, cat owner that has that situation, but...
No, not at all. And thank goodness. You know, there are some really, at least here in Madison, we have a really great compounding pharmacy, and I rely on them quite a bit to make medications into either flavored liquids or flavored tablets or transdermal formulations, so it's easier to get pets to take what they need to take.
So, yeah. Oh, boy. Deb in Elk Mound, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Good afternoon. We have a six-year-old cat that came to us as a kitten stray, mm-hmm. and in the past 2 years has developed, I will not probably say this right, it's eosinophilic granuloma complex, which we have to, in order to treat them, sedate them mildly and take them to the vet, and every 3 months he gets a steroidal injection.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps recurring, and at its worst, he has a difficult time eating and has difficulty in his lower left jaw.
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough thing for cats, and it's really tied in with the immune system. Kind of like an overreactive immune system, and that's why getting that steroid injection kind of as you need to every 3 months or so just to help tone down the immune system that's overreacting can make a difference. But, you know, usually it's just kind of one of those management issues. I would, again, kind of go back to the things that I was talking about earlier to help support the immune system, like, you know, a really good high-quality food. A lot of times cats that have this granuloma complex do have food sensitivities. So it might be worth, if your cat has been on the same food for a long period of time, maybe switching to a different protein, different type of food, but then adding in the probiotics, adding in digestive enzymes, maybe fish oil or omega-3 fatty acid, the CBD oil, all of those things will help support the immune system so it's not as reactive as it is right now.
Yeah. Good luck, Deb. Thank you so much for calling. Liz in Wausau wondered about cat breeds that are more prone to kidney issues. She wants to know, besides wet food, what else can she do to promote kidney health?
That's a good question. Yeah, in certain breeds of cats, like Himalayans, tend to be more likely to develop kidney issues. But even going a step beyond canned food, a lot of times if the pet owner is willing to do it, I recommend doing kind of like a fresh food or a raw food diet. And there are some really great prepared raw foods that are available that you can get either frozen and you have to thaw them out before feeding your pet, or freeze-dried and you just reconstitute with water. But those are very nice because they're limited ingredients, they're fresh, they're human-grade protein, so really no filler in them at all. So, and it's kind of some of those things like the fillers that tend to weigh down the kidneys. The biggest thing is just feeding the highest quality of protein that you can. So in my mind, that would be feeding one of those fresh, raw foods.
Are there particular brands, or is there something to look for, or some sort of good housekeeping seal of approval on some of them, or?
Well, you know, the brand that I really like, and it's actually made here in Wisconsin, it's called Stella and Chewy's. And they make either frozen or freeze-dried raw foods for dogs and cats. That's what I feed my dog. And so that's a brand that I trust. Really looking on the label, you want to see that it says human-grade protein or human-grade ingredients. I think that goes a long way, too.
We had an email from Shannon who wondered about what your thoughts were about heartworm treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, heartworm treatment or heartworm preventative?
She says treatment. I wonder if she meant preventative.
Maybe just kind of like preventing heartworm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and as the weather warms up, the mosquitoes start to come out. So whenever that happens, I recommend that pet owners start on the heartworm preventative because it is a risk here in Wisconsin. And I've already, at my little clinic, have seen a number of heartworm positive cases over the last year, which is new. So I know that, you know, it's here. And so instead of taking a break in the winter, I'm starting to recommend just doing heartworm preventative year round once a month.
So there we go. Carrie, it's been great having you with us today. I want to thank you so much. And your website?
It is fullcirclepet.com.
Fullcirclepet.com. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy person. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, of course. Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Carrie Donahue, Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. And I know she gets lots of folks from Madison and outside of Madison as well come to her clinic. So thanks very much for having her with us. If you'd like to know more about our guests and show topics, I hope you'll check out our new blog. We just posted an article on the importance of prairies and how to start one of your own. You just go to WPR.org/Larry for more on that and a lot of other topics as well. And again, if you can go back to WPR.org/Larry and you can hear this recording coming up and all of the past shows going back 4 years. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.